We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal Boys and Girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. Joining me over there in beautiful Chicagoland, the one, the only, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm great, Ty. I am rested. I am showered. I am cleaned. I have run a brush through my hair. I was thinking about in that shower in which I cleansed my body of week six.
Right.
I was thinking about how I am going to come to define Saturday and a little bit before Saturday, I suppose. Did you ever see Wolf of Wall Street, Ty?
I did. Very long movie.
Long movie.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Quaalude scene?
I do.
Where they take too many Quaaludes?
I do.
I felt like I was having a slow reaction Saturday. So Anytime I'd be watching a game or checking a score app or looking at the score bug in the bottom of whatever, Fox or ESPN.
Right.
Every single one of my reactions seemed to be, whether it was Auburn, Arkansas score or Mizzou, LSU or Texas A&M, Florida or Oklahoma, Texas, all of the reactions were, what? Or no. Or looking at Mississippi State, Kentucky. Eesh.
Like the scene where Frank got hit with the tranquilizer dart in Old School and just sort of at the birthday party, falls into the pool.
Yes. We
texted a little bit about the games this weekend. And I said, well, it's kind of like a home dog and underdog Saturday. And you proposed Samoyed Saturday after the Solid Pup.
I mean, that's the literal home dog of the Solid Verbal, the official home dog, right?
So Solid Wife Kate we're talking this through and she fully endorses this idea. So
I'm going
with Samoyed Saturday. You can go with slow reaction or slow burn or slow whatever. It was an action-packed week six, to say the least. We're going to get through as much of the action as possible.
I love a good hefty early window as well, Ty, where you're not waiting. You're just like, all right, we're throwing you in. What's going to happen? Who friggin' knows? Oklahoma, Texas going to 9 overtimes. North Carolina, Virginia Tech putting up 1,400 yards. Texas A&M, Florida back and forth. Let's get with it. I love a hefty early window, Ty.
All your offense belong to us was sort of the theme of week six. Outside of the day of the dog, the Samoyed, the underdog, the whole, whatever you want to say, we have a lot to discuss here. Points were not in short supply. Defense absolutely positively was. So we're going to get into as much of that action as possible. Hello, welcome back to the show. I am Ty. He is Dan. Thank you so much for stopping on by to recap all the action with us. Don't forget, you can follow along on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Facebook at Solid Verbal. We also have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolidverbal is where you can check out our video stream. There's also a subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com where our verballers gather amongst themselves and discuss all of our episodes and the action on Saturdays and immediately thereafter. And coming up this Wednesday, the 14th, I believe, Dan, we are also going to be launching a new effort, our Patreon community.
Yes.
Which I'm very excited about. So we'll discuss maybe a little bit later on in the program what that entails and get that all teed up for the week ahead. But why don't we start where we usually start on the recap show? Why don't we have a listen to your week 6 reverbs? Here you go.
Dan, Ty, this is Sean in Parts Unknown. And this 2020 football season is starting to give me heavy 2007 vibes. You know, teams that we thought were good aren't good. Top 5 teams lose every week. Is LSU the worst team in the SEC West? This thing is crazy. It's upside down. And I kind of love it.
Howdy, y'all. This is Reem from Baton Rouge.
This is Mike from the mean streets of the East End.
This is Zach from Atlanta.
Dan, Ty, this is Kevin in Nashville.
Howdy, Dan, Ty, this is Ryan from Dallas, Texas. Just about pissed myself watching the Aggies beat the hell out of Florida. And Ty, I don't think you're wrong, because I think this is Soak Myself Saturday.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Ty. This is Alexis, longtime verballer, first-time caller from Dallas, Texas. And you know what the Aggies did? They made Kyle understand why you don't just walk into Kyle Field and take over the Aggies. Gig 'em, Aggs!
My fighting Texas Aggies just knocked off the Gators.
Hey, this is Jack from Florida and Todd Grantham. Yeah.
Hey, Ty and Dan, quick question for you. Has anyone ever seen Brian Van Gorder and Todd Grantham in the same room at the same time? No, I didn't think so.
Man, watching these games, there's a lot of people keeping Penn State's seat warm in the top 5. We are!
Watching my Virginia Tech Hokies rack up more QB changes than touchdowns and absolutely destroying the backup is better than the starter narrative.
I just want to let you know that my first marriage didn't last as long as that Oklahoma-Texas game.
What was your favorite Sam Ellinger overthrow to a wide-open receiver?
What is that? Is that a rattlesnake? No, that's a rattler snake. Boomer Sooner, baby.
Hey, so have y'all like ever played a video game where you got like a bunch of items and then wasted them immediately? Y'all think KJ Costello did that with his passing yards for the season?
Go Wildcats! Stick 'em! Meow 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 meow.
What do you know? Georgia Tech beat Louisville. Go Jack.
I just got done watching Marshall whoop up on the Hilltoppers. Knock, knock. Who's there? Another rushing touchdown. Go Herd.
Hi, guys. This is Jacob from Columbia, Missouri. And all I got to say is LS who? More like LS 1 and 2. M-I-Z.
Dan and Ty, we did it. M-I-Z-Z-O-U. And special shout out to Coach O.
Go Tigers. Mizzou. Tigers.
Ed Orgeron? More like Ed Frogeron, am I right?
Two things I know about Connor Bazelak so far. One, he's a dude. Two, he really knows how to spin it.
It appears LSU 2020 is the football equivalent of doesn't matter, had sex.
Still reeling from the fact that Auburn got away with a backward pass and a fumble. How did this happen? We're Arkansas.
59-yard field goal to send the game into overtime, missing an extra point to lose the game.
Can I just say how vindicating it is to have our team win 31-30 over a team from Pennsylvania on a missed extra point after the 2014 Pinstripe Bowl with your Penn State Nittany Lions. Go Eagles, 3-1, baby.
Heard Nick Saban after the game say that maybe this game will wake his defense up. Is Saban on board with Splash Some Water Saturday?
Thank you, Alabama and Ole Miss, for giving me this Pac-12 after dark feeling. I sure missed it.
More than wondering how we lost the game tonight. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
All right, Dan, there you go. Passion, fire.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotion. We know that we are going to get an especially spicy batch of reverbs, when people start tweeting us or sending us messages on Instagram. I need that reverb line. Yeah. Oh, do I need that reverb line?
What's the reverb line again?
Send me that reverb line.
What's the reverb line?
408 verbal one. Yeah, what's the number? I need that reverb line. Yeah. Guys, got to throw me that reverb line number. 408 verbal one for those who are wondering that need that venting space on Saturdays.
Yeah. All right. Well, where do we want to start? I mean, like I said, offense not in short supply, a ton of points. If you like offense, it was a good week for you. Yeah. And we knew going in that there were a lot of tasty matchups that you and I were digging, right?
Mm-hmm.
You never know, obviously, until a week is over, how well something lived up to the billing. I do know that going into week six, as I was trying to figure out my picks and my locks, I had almost no confidence. Even the Florida lock, which I think I kind of trumpeted a little bit more than I should have, obviously.
Give me a reason, Dan. Give me a reason why Texas A&M will be in this game. Just give me one reason.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I love it.
On the preview show, I went in a little heavy on Florida. Even that game, I had a really squint to try and find something that I would feel good talking about and putting my name to as a lock. So the week did not disappoint. Why don't we start with that Florida game?
Yeah.
Because that was obviously a pretty big deal in the SEC, and around college football. 41-38 was your final in favor of the Texas A&M Aggies. I whiffed on this one. Full disclosure, I know it. I don't care. Big boy win for Jimbo Fisher. Big boy win for him. Big boy win for the program. It's their first win over a top five team at Kyle Field since 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a huge freaking bounce back win after getting mauled by Alabama a week prior to come back home now to knock off the Florida Gators, the top five teams, a really big deal. If you didn't watch the game, here's what you missed. Down the stretch, I'll just kind of highlight this one sequence here.
Please.
Tied 38-38 with about 4 minutes left. Florida had the ball at like midfield, somewhere thereabouts. Malik Davis fumbles. A&M recovers it. They march down the field. They get in the red zone. They ran enough clock. They kick a 26-yarder to win it. 41-38 was your final, Dan. What are your thoughts in this game?
Well, first of all, whoever had this Texas A&M team as the home dog of the week, first of all, just pat that friend on the back.
Right.
Because they said Kellen Mond is better at home. They said Texas A&M is inconsistent and winning in the SEC can be tough on the road. So I don't know, whoever that was. So my actual thoughts of this game were Kellen Mond looked especially decisive, which is not something we've always seen from him in bigger games. Now, the Florida defense seems to be a really nice defense to be decisive against. The Todd Grantham third down issue that people have loved to point out over the years could not have been more obvious on Saturday. 12 of 15 for Texas A&M on third down.
Wow.
And there was a confidence about Kellen Mond, whether it was play action slant, whether it was downfield to Caleb Chapman, who, by the way, was just a revelation. And hopefully his knee is okay. I did see whispers that he might be dealing with a knee issue after the game. So hopefully he's okay. The fact that Kellen Mond was just so on top of this Gator defense, where defenses have confused him in conference play. And he was just absolutely sure of what he saw, and for good reason. I thought the offensive line came to play for the Aggies. I thought Isaiah Spiller was exceptional, see lane, hit lane. And that was across college football yesterday, a great day on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
If you like ground games on offense, it was a really fun Saturday for you. And Isaiah Spiller probably was a big reason for that if you're watching a lot of games on Saturday. And then defensively, obviously, Buddy Johnson comes up big with that strip late to set up that game-winning field goal for A&M. But to me, it was that combination of Kellen Mond finding that go-to target, which we've talked about A&M needing in Caleb Chapman, right. And then the Florida defense just getting flattened and just did their own offense negative favors. That Florida defense in that secondary looked confused. They weren't tackling. Very strange to see. Even for a Todd Grantham-led defense. I still think he is an okay to pretty good defensive coordinator, but talent-wise, they seemed lackluster. And that, to me, was the surprise. And
I agree.
You know, Texas A&M owning this game like they did, and they win it last second. It's not like they demolished Florida, but offensively, with what they've looked like, and they were fine against Alabama, really cool to see. Really cool to see a team step up. I love that.
Yeah, like you said, really nice game for Kellen Mond, a breakout game for Isaiah Spiller, 174, two touchdowns on the ground. You know, of note here for A&M, just going to throw this out there. I know I was dogging A&M a week ago. Especially in an atypical season where truly, after what we saw yesterday, everyone in the SEC feels very vulnerable.
Right.
I think it's noteworthy that we're 3 weeks in for A&M and they're through the hardest part of their schedule.
Thank
They've got the Bama game out of the way. They've got the Florida game out of the way. Anytime you play in the SEC, there are landmines. I'm not saying it's easy, but more so than any other team in that conference, they've got the hard stuff out of the way now.
Mississippi State, not as tough as they appeared to be. That's who A&M has next week, I believe, in Starkville.
Right.
And LSU is in Gainesville for Florida. So, wow. A lot of readjusting of both of these teams moving forward with their opponents. It's great.
Real quick, I'll just address this and then we'll move on to the Missouri LSU game. Somebody asked us before what it meant that Kyle Trask and Kyle Pitts at that combo would have a chance to play in Kyle Field, which is like a little bit.
Yeah.
That's Kyle overload.
That's a mistake on our part for not connecting those three dots. Yeah,
it is. And I was optimistic here. Obviously, I locked up the Gators, but it was clearly too much Kyle for the Kyle driver. It's like I did this yesterday where you're trying to screw a screw in and you just like horse it too much and you strip the screw. Yeah. That's sort of, I think, the Kyle driver effect we had in College Station on Saturday.
I mean, Kyle Trask was really good. I thought A&M did a pretty nice job, all things considered. It's all relative of keeping the Florida offense in front of them. Kyle Trask finished with four touchdowns. He had that really ugly interception that was called back for a penalty where he threw into the triple coverage. But that Kyle Pitts did not get 157 and three touchdowns is a testament to what he's done early on this season.
Yeah.
So,
and he got,
it's all relative.
He got a little nicked up in this one. Was limited a bit by a foot injury. We hope he's okay. Big win for A&M, 41-38. Also in the SEC, we had Missouri 45, LSU 41. You remember when, I don't remember exactly what the date was, but do you remember when you heard that LSU was going to bring Bo Pelini to coach coach the defense, excuse me?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking after the season that LSU just had, to be losing Dave Aranda but replace him with Bo Pelini, the rich really do get richer, don't they?
A coup of sorts, yeah.
LSU gave up 586 in total yardage yesterday, including 406 through the air. A huge game on the road for Connor Bazelak, Missouri quarterback, who looked every bit the part and just scorched this LSU defense, Dan. Ed Orgeron called it embarrassing. He was embarrassed.
$2 million for Bo Pelini?
Ah.
I think that's the number. And to show what LSU showed against Mississippi State and now against Missouri, who probably won't have a killer season. That is my opinion, but I do love the feeling that fans probably have when they discover their favorite team has found a quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
Like, I believe Mizzou fans should be feeling after what Connor Bazelak showed, but who knows? Maybe it's just another terrible LSU defensive performance. I came away just crazy impressed with him, though.
And so did I.
Miles Brennan had a really nice day as well. The LSU offense is in a pretty good place. The running game wasn't fully there for LSU, but was it Terrace Marshall who went completely off against Mizzou? I mean, good for the Tigers for holding on and believing and fighting in this game. I think they had receivers out from this game. Like, they were down serious numbers in the receiving core. So the flea flickers and the guys running way open downfield for Mizzou. And that's credit to Mizzou for hitting those dudes. But the LSU defense, what? How? Yeah. So quickly. This is a gap year for LSU. More and more is what it seemed. They'll win a couple interesting games. They're going to lose more. I don't know what to expect from this LSU team beyond shootout-y performances, I guess, moving forward.
Let me keep it with Mizzou for a second, though.
Okay.
Obviously, a lot of points here. The Mizzou defense actually stepped up in a few key spots here.
The fourth quarter in general, for sure.
Yeah, the fourth quarter in general, whether it was like the dramatic goal line stand to preserve the win, or there was a moment in the second quarter where they had turned the ball over, LSU got it, they held LSU to a field goal. Like, little stuff like that adds up, and I think contributes to my next point, which is just that there is a pluck factor here with mm-hmm. Mizzou. I think maybe it comes from Eli Drinkwitz. We know he's an excitable guy, but, you know, Let me ask you this, based on what you saw,
yeah,
do you think Mizzou is good enough to beat any of these teams? You ready?
Okay. Yep.
Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Kentucky.
Yeah.
Arkansas.
Yes.
Mississippi State.
Yes.
That would be a 5-win season. And there are other opponents on that schedule who I think could be beatable as well. So
who do they have left outside of those?
I think South Carolina is one that I left off. South Carolina we'll talk about in a little bit.
I think South Carolina's beatable.
There are a couple other ones on there. I think the upper limit from what I saw just going off the top of my head was maybe a 6-win season, a very narrow pathway to get there. But
I think Kentucky's tough. Yeah, it's at South Carolina, at Florida, and obviously it was supposed to be at LSU this week. By the way, do you know how difficult it is to lose the turnover battle to a talented team like LSU? 3-0. They lost 3 fumbles, Mizzou did, and win a game?
It's tough.
I think Duke did something similar against Syracuse, but that's Syracuse. I think they lost the turnover battle 4-0. But LSU throwing out 0 converted third downs, it nudges things in the Mizzou direction for sure.
Just a little bit. All right, yeah. So big win for Mizzou and Eli Drinkwitz's first win in Columbia, Missouri. Okay.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Alabama 63, Ole Miss. Ole Miss 48. Good old-fashioned SEC shootout, Dan.
Yeah. This was the best TV show of the day to me. Not the best football game.
No.
Yeah.
I watched this on the iPad while doing the fire pit outside. I was sending you pictures of that.
Yeah. Looked terrific.
A combined 1,370 yards. Not much defense. Mm-hmm. Frankly, if Ole Miss played any defense, they might have won. I read to you a tweet from our good friend Roger Sherman over at The Ringer.
Yeah.
Ole Miss's defense prevented 41 total yards of offense tonight. As in, on 11 drives, they allowed 9 touchdowns, forced a punt at the 40, and a fumble at the 1. if Alabama had gained every possible yard, they would have gained 764 yards, but instead gained 723. Wow. 41 yards, Dan, of resistance. That is all Alabama had to contend with. And still, this was a really close game for most of the way.
Yeah, I guess if you're an Alabama fan feeling hungover watching this new look Alabama defense and not probably thrilled with Pete Gelding, I guess rest assured that a team needed to play an absolute lights out perfect offensive game and they still lost by, what, 15 or 16 points?
Yep.
So that's maybe a sliver of silver lining. The thing that I took away from this game was Ole Miss is going to be dangerous,
especially
as they get to be more talented on defense. What they are able to do with Matt Corral moving forward, because he just looked lights out.
A little bit of Baker Mayfield in him, don't you think?
A little bit. They just demolished the middle of this Alabama defense. Linebackers were late. The front got pushed around both on the ground and they were controlled. The pass rush wasn't there. Matt Corral was not running for his life. That would not be a phrase I would use in discussing this Ole Miss offense. And what is it, Kenny Yeboah, the transfer from Temple, the sort of combination tight end receiver. He's just a giant receiver or a slimmer tight end. He was amazing. I mean, the both running backs with Snoop Connor and Jerry and Ely were finding lane after lane on the edge. Not a pun intended there, by the way. This was a fun as hell game. Mac Jones was incredible. The Alabama receivers were incredible. Najee Harris was spectacular. But I don't know if it's an Alabama scoring too quickly thing. I don't know if it's an Alabama defense being on the field for too long thing and not having the type of endurance that perhaps a proper offseason would have afforded them. I don't know if there's an actual proper excuse beyond them not being good enough to stop consistently an Ole Miss offense. But once again, Ty, what should you do with your clunkers?
You got to win them. You just got to win the clunkers.
You got to win them, and Bama did. Bama moves on with a W.
My only other point here, I think you hit most of the big ones. We're not going to sit here and read off stats.
Right.
It's clear that there were plenty of stats to go around in this game. Ole Miss played at almost an illegal tempo in this game. They played so fast. There were a bunch of plays where Bama wasn't even lined up and they were snapping the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a team like Alabama, I guess, is good enough and deep enough to rotate guys in and contend with that. But take the defensive issues for Ole Miss aside, there are going to be some teams in the SEC that just can't hang with that. If they can continue that pace the whole year through, they're going to wear some defenses down. They will, no doubt.
At Arkansas, Auburn, at Vanderbilt, South Carolina, at A&M, Mississippi State, at LSU.
Wow.
Is there a complete team in that listing
No.
There are complete teams and no Georgia there. No Georgia on that schedule. Pretty nice. And so can I ask you a pie chart question?
Pie chart question? Sure.
A pie chart question, yes. Yeah. If you are going to come up with a 60-40, 70-30, 52-48 type look, visual, how much of what Ole Miss did was because Lane Kiffin has just cracked the code with his own offense and game planned really well, and there's playmakers everywhere, and how much of it do you think is his intimate knowledge of what Nick Saban wants to do on defense and being able to teach Matt Corral that, okay, when you see this, this is what they're doing. When you see this, this is what they're trying to disguise, but this is what they're going to be doing. And how much of it was just pure skilled execution?
Yeah, I mean, I would...
This is just a guess. I'm just asking you to guess.
Sure. There's no doubt he's got some insider knowledge on how Saban works. He worked for them.
Because if it comes out that, Ole Miss hacked into Alabama's radio frequency, like, oh, that makes sense. That makes total sense. But also Texas A&M pilloried Alabama down the middle of the field as well. There is kind of a formula with the 2020 Alabama defense that you can mess around with their linebackers.
Sure. No, I think it helps that he had a working knowledge, but we've seen Ole Miss in the early going here look really good on offense. So I tend to think it's got less to do with Alabama and more to do with Ole Miss.
Yeah. I think I was looking for the word pillage, not pilloried. But you know what?
Pillory's different, but that's fine.
Happy accident, I guess.
All right. We got to get moving here. We got much to discuss.
Okay.
Auburn, let's move on. 30, Arkansas 28. This is a rain-soaked game, Dan. A monsoon game, if you will. I think the Hogs got screwed. Did you see the play?
Yeah, I did. I think, and I did again. And I did again.
Yeah.
I did again. Yeah.
So they're up by one. The clock's running. Auburn's driving. Bo Nix has to snap it and clock it to set up a game-winning field goal. But if you fumble the snap, that's sort of like, that negates that process, right? It's written into the rules that you can clock the ball. But if you fumble it, if you bobble it, well, then it's all bets are sort of off.
Especially if you clock it backwards and it's no longer a forward incomplete pass.
And that's what amounted to, I think, the controversy here. He bobbles the snap. He then goes to clock it. It was basically a backwards pass that Arkansas recovered. Now, the SEC acknowledged at some point after the game that, look, they didn't recover it within the continuity of the play. Therefore, it maintained possession with Auburn. I didn't really get all that. It looked like a backwards pass. It looked like a fumble. It seems like Arkansas got screwed.
If people were watching this at an Italian deli, a back room of an Italian deli, and saw that SEC statement, they'd say, I don't know, gabagool? I don't know. They'd say, get out of here.
Get out of here.
What are we doing?
Forget about it.
No. we are just deeply, deeply bad at impressions. Continue.
Felipe Franks looked really good, was probably the best player in the game. 318, mm-hmm. passing through the air, 4 touchdowns. Good games on the Auburn side for Tank Bigsby, Anthony Schwartz. Yeah. They had a really significant role to play here. Auburn's on the road next week at South Carolina. They're on the road the following week at Ole Miss, the week after that. Can I make a bet right now that Auburn's going to lose one of those games?
Sure. I wouldn't take that bet.
I would like to make that bet right now that Auburn's going to lose one of those games. It feels to me, this is a good team. It's a talented team. It feels like they've got one coming.
They went up 17-0 in this game and held on thanks to extremely questionable, if not outright poor officiating, right?
Yeah, it's true.
I tweeted out that it was an extremely flimsy explanation, but they underscored the immediate element. It has to be recovered immediately. I think it was clocked at 29 seconds and the recovery happened at 28 seconds. I don't know. Like, do you expect Arkansas to catch the clocked lateral? what is the expectation exactly? I think you're right on all other elements of this game, that Tank Bigsby was really good. Felipe Franks may have had the game of his life, considering the opponent and the team he is playing for, which I think has a lot of fight and interesting character to it. So, fascinating game. And one of those games, by the way, where the broadcasters were like, friend, we've been calling games for a long time. We've never seen anything like this.
Crazy game.
You know it's weird happens.
30-28, Auburn escapes with a victory. But promising sign if you're a Hog fan. We have a lot of Arkansas people who actually listen to this show. And
yeah, woo pig.
They have not been competitive for 3 years running. So to see them do what they've done the last 2 weeks, really this whole season so far,
and what they should have done to the head coach who helped them to be not competitive.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
All right. Quickly, other SEC action. We had Georgia 44-21 over Tennessee. Almost two separate games in this one, Dan. There was the first half and then what Georgia did to Tennessee in the second half. Yeah. First half, I'm sitting there. I'm like scratching my head. Like, are we getting good Garantano here? What's going on? He was 11 of 13, 124, 2 touchdowns, looked crisp, look sharp. Second half, it was back to, I think, what we've come to expect from Jared Garantano. 12 of 23, 91 yards. There was a pick in there.
Ugly fumbles. Yeah.
Yeah. I was wrong with pretty much everything I said yesterday or about yesterday.
Yeah.
What I wasn't wrong about was Georgia stacking the box and forcing Garantano to beat him. Mm-hmm. And the first half, that worked. The second half, it didn't. And obviously, that's when Georgia was able to pull away and go on like a 27-0 run in the second half here.
Yeah, I mean, you're decidedly pro-Georgia in the outcome of this game. But think about what could have happened if Georgia snapped the ball into the end zone consistently and Tennessee was able to recover fumbles for touchdowns all game long, true, we're talking about a pretty competitive matchup here, because that's how Tennessee obviously scored their first points in this game. And so 14 total offensive points, which were on both really nice throws from Jarrett Garantano. But you're right, drive to drive, I don't know what to expect from him. And that's
a problem.
That's no way to build a season, Ty.
No, no, it isn't.
It's no way to build a season. I don't know if there's a better answer behind him, because my inclination is to think that, well, the coaches watch practice and they get an understanding of the quarterbacks they have. And Jarrett Garantano is the guy that gives them the best chance to win. But there are... against really good teams, you're just going to get 4 to 5.8 stinker drives from him over the course of a game. And I feel for Tennessee fans, because you see the good version of him with that. It was underthrown, but an incredible adjustment from Josh Palmer on one of those touchdown throws. I'm impressed by Georgia. I continue to worry a little bit about Stetson Bennett, but he is maximizing his own talent, and all he probably has to do against basically everybody Georgia will play, not everybody, but basically everybody, is be fine. You see the picture of him wearing the mailman's hat as a recruit?
I like it.
There's a charm to him, but I don't want to let that charm and that narrative get in the way of, he's going to have to complete some tough passes against some better teams. Didn't have to fully for four quarters against Tennessee, but Georgia didn't run the ball incredibly impressively against Tennessee. And that's going to be the case moving forward against some other opponents. I'd like to see more of that, because right now I think the cup is full, which is great, but they might be full at like a B+ level.
One final note here, as you know, look, I'm all about wearing the masks to prevent the spread of the virus.
Yeah.
I was not prepared for Jeremy Pruitt wearing his, like he was one of the marauders in Mad Max.
Was he his Lawrence of Arabia look?
Yeah.
I
was really not ready for that.
Yeah. It was.
I just wasn't mentally prepared.
Wandering through the desert, doesn't want to become dehydrated by letting so much of his skin be attacked by the vicious sun. It was a rough look. You have to make a decision one way or another that you're just going to bypass SEC protocol entirely, or wear a mask.
I didn't know what that was.
And then he found other.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Final two games here in the SEC. Then we got to talk about the Red River Shootout.
Pew.
Kentucky 24-2 over Mississippi State. Mississippi State threw 6 picks in this game. And South Carolina 41-7 over Vandy. I know it's just Vandy, but South Carolina, I think, continues to look better than even I expected a couple weeks ago. Kevin Harris looked good on the ground here. They're at home against Auburn next week, as I said. A few moments ago. That could be an interesting matchup that perhaps we'll come back to. But any quick thoughts on these two games?
Well, on Kentucky-Mississippi State, it's going to be a long year for Mississippi State, which is shocking considering what we saw out of week one. But then we adjusted what we thought of LSU now, and we have been adjusting what we think of LSU. So, yeah, it's going to be a long year. And there's a reason why the air raid sometimes takes some time to gel. It took some time to gel at Wazoo because of talent issues, but not having the offseason that State would have liked to have had with KJ Costello and the receivers and just the general scheme and everything like that. The fact that guys are just dropping into zones and preventing everything and jumping into every lane, it's going to take time. I'm not ready to write off Mike Leach after three games or something like that, but it's a tough watch because Kentucky offensively was not all that much. They were subpar, but that was subpar was eons ahead of where Mississippi State was offensively. And so I don't have many thoughts beyond that. I scrubbed through it quickly this morning. Rough watch, Ty. What was the other game you mentioned? South Carolina, Vandy?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm surprised you don't have the drive chart ready for that Kentucky Mississippi State game, because it was bad. It was like,
I have
157 yards of total offense for Kentucky.
I have the drive chart. If you want me to hit the drive chart, somebody tweet us the entirety of the Mississippi State drive chart, like since the LSU game. Here, I'm gonna dial up my buddy. Was it? It's Anton Dvorak. I forget his first name.
Yeah, you gotta pin your ears back.
Okay, here we go. Okay, that's the Moonlight Serenade playlist. All right, I'm just going to go. I'm taking punt, 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 interception, 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 and a pick six. Turnover on downs, turnover on downs, turnover on downs, turnover on downs, lost fumble, missed field goal, end of half, two touchdowns.
Did you, hold on, did you read those in order?
No, I went through the 11 punts, the interceptions, including a pick six, four turnovers on down. I'm going through it like partridge in a pear tree.
Okay, fair enough.
And then from like it's wacky, Ty. It's a wacky year all around, and Starkville was not spared.
All right, let's go to the Big 12.
Okay,
Red River Shootout, Oklahoma 53, Texas 45. Boy, did this live up to the billing, huh?
Disagree.
Okay.
I hated this game.
Why did you hate this game?
Because it was sloppy. The turnovers were what was leading to a lot early on. Spencer Rattler with like that weird scoop fumble that he tossed directly to Texas. A really ugly interception from him. Sam Ellinger, which is, I don't know. Okay. You know how sometimes you have theories that you know are not correct, but there's a lot of truth to them? I don't know if there's a word for that. Maybe somebody can let us know. Where it's just like an informed hunch. I don't know if Texas has built their entire offense. I don't know if it's a Tom Herman thing. It's probably not a Mike Yearsick thing because they were doing this before with Tim Beck. I don't know if it's a Sam Ellinger thing and a comfort thing with him. Does it seem like the entirety of Texas's offense is built around slow developing crossing routes? Like that's just, Sam Ellinger's like, this is my thing. This is my kink.
You
slow developing crossing routes.
You texted this to me last night that Sam Ellinger never met a slow developing crossing route that he didn't love.
Are there plays where Sam Ellinger, and I've watched so much Texas these past few years, where he is consistently throwing the ball to somebody running the opposite direction of him? Like running downfield while catching a ball. It's just an out pattern here, a crossing route here, a little screen there, where it's just so much short stuff. Like he is the Acura legend in our reference to Phil Jurkovec. Like his career might be summed up of just like 50 passes, 5.8 per, had to lead a team back in a gutty way in the last minute 47.
Yeah.
Like what? I'm done with it, Ty. I'm just done.
You're right. You're right about the fact that they are building the offense entirely out of Sam Ellinger. And
yeah,
we could talk about Tom Herman.
And this is not a criticism of Sam Ellinger.
It's not.
What Texas has become.
But I think it's probably a criticism of Tom Herman to some extent.
Yeah.
Like this is year four. He's 2-2. He's got three nice bowl wins, which is nice. And he's made some changes to the staff, both offense and defense, to try and revitalize things. But it just doesn't feel any different, does it? Like,
no.
Maybe it's taken a little bit to kind of settle in now as we're switching systems a bit, but each year has kind of felt the same. And it's disappointing from the standpoint of this was supposed to be the year. And it could have been the year. Now, there are factors, right? We've got a virus that made it difficult to learn new systems, to be around your teammates.
New coordinators on both sides of the ball.
Right. Anytime you swap out coaches like that, it can take a while to really settle in. But the talent is there. And outside of some questions about, is the running game going to take a step forward and who's Sam Ellinger going to throw to? Excuse me. It felt like a lot was in place to do better than this. And look, they could have won this game, right? We shouldn't bury the lead with that. Like this one went to four overtimes.
But you can say that about 93% of Texas games. They really had a good chance to win this game. Or, man, they pulled it out late. Good for them.
I know. What I found fun about this game, where I do disagree with you, is that it's a big rivalry. Both teams reverted back to true north. Like, what we thought about these teams, in the words of Kesha, we are who we are. Like, they reverted back to who they really are. Texas reverted back almost entirely to an offense driven by Sam Ellinger. Come hell or high water, he was the leading rusher, both in terms of yardage and attempts, and obviously leading passer, right? That's just what
Texas
is.
Isn't this Beck-Meyer syndrome?
A little bit.
Your quarterback is running the ball 23 times and your leading running back runs it 5 times?
And on the Oklahoma side, it was, again, a deal where they blow a fourth quarter lead.
Yeah, the third down pass gave what it gifted Texas about 40 extra seconds.
We had big swings in this one. Oklahoma went up early. Texas came back. Then Oklahoma goes up again. Texas comes back again. Send it to overtime. Send it to overtime.
No, it's I like overtime.
Send it to overtime. It feels like we're going to a place pretty quickly where the Big 12 plays itself out of the playoff. And I know you don't like thinking of it in terms of the playoff, but
I don't care about the playoff as much as I care about Iowa State running the table in the conference, which is happening.
So you didn't like this game. I enjoyed it.
No.
53-45 was the final score. The game went about 4.5 hours. This is a long freaking football game because of all the OT.
Yeah. I thought I was so crazy for thinking Texas's offense was what it was that I went back and scrubbed through the 2019 matchup. We're not talking about an Oklahoma team who keeps the offenses that they play in front of them. We're not talking about a lethal defense. We're not talking about a par defense at times. And this is what Texas is. I don't know if it's a fear factor. I don't know if it's by design. Whatever it is, it's 4.5 hours of that tie. It went to overtime. I was like, you know what? I'm throwing my hands like Jerry Seinfeld at the Curb Your Enthusiasm play. I'm just like, I'm done with this. I'm gonna follow it on the bottom line. If somebody's telling me Oklahoma has a chance to drive and win it and whatever overtime, I'll flip it. But no, I'm not hanging on the balance of every single time Joel Klatt and Gus Johnson are calling each other partner. I'm done.
Yep. Gus Johnson, by the way, really jinxed some of the kicking game in this one.
Yeah. I think I'm opting out of Texas football. How about that?
It's your prerogative. Okay. Elsewhere in the Big 12, we had two teams that were in action that are still unbeaten in conference. One of them is K-State. K-State goes on the road without Skylar Thompson. They win 21-14 over TCU. They start Will Howard, the pride of Downingtown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, what a journey. Is that near you somewhere?
Yeah, it's close.
Nice.
It's really close. Just 8 of 19 through the air, but led the way on the ground thanks to a really long, nice 80-yard run. Cats are unbeaten in the Big 12. They've got Kansas. They've got West Virginia up next before they get into, you know, teams like Oklahoma State and Iowa State. Eventually, they play Texas at the end of the year. But K-State, one of those teams, I think, already exceeding expectations. We kind of assumed that they were going to take a step back. And it's not to say that they haven't in some respects, but
right. They
are certainly just playing really solid football for Chris Klieman right now. And you know, as evidenced by the fact that they were without their quarterback and still went on the road and got a big win here, they were like a 8.5 point dog at kickoff. Mm-hmm. So
it was probably because somebody knew something about Skylar Thompson, or everybody did, just not us. But yes,
nonetheless, a nice win for them, 21-14 over TCU on the road.
The collision course Big 12 matchup between K-State and Iowa State, like we all talked about all year long.
Farmageddon, right?
For the title. TCU, I hadn't seen this stat going in and kind of wish I had. They're like 9-2 or something since joining the Big 12. I know that number's wrong, but something crazy impressive against Texas. And then they're like 2-8 or something the week after beating Texas. So the letdown is very real for, I guess, the Frogs after beating the Longhorns. And K-State without, as you mentioned, their starting quarterback, they got the long run out of the pride of Will Howard.
Downingtown,
PA. They got the long run, but not much more offensively because TCU predictably stacked the box. But TCU's offensive line issues are extremely real. Max Duggan was knocked out for a couple drives, and K-State's defense came to play. I don't even think it's winning your clunkers. It's just winning with one hand tied behind your back without your starting quarterback and not being able to do much because of that. And K-State defense came to play. Really impressive. And I'm being totally serious now that matchup in Ames is probably the most interesting of the remaining Big 12 games left to me.
Speaking of Ames, Iowa State and Brocktober roll on once more.
Correct.
31-15 over Texas Tech. Tech drew first blood. They had a 90-yard kick return of a block kick, I should say.
Yeah.
About midway through the first quarter, which went back for a touchdown. But then the Clones answered 31 straight. They put this game out of reach. Nice day for Brock Purdy. Nice day for Breece Hall. They got a big one in 2 weeks. on the road in Stillwater, but outside of that opening week loss, it's looking pretty good for both Iowa State and K-State.
Yeah, Breece Hall is probably having the best season of any Big 12 running back, though Chuba Hubbard is a better running back. And just a really workmanlike, efficient effort for Iowa State. Look what happens when your offense doesn't make many mistakes and your defense comes to play and your opponent is Texas Tech. You win comfortably and you move on. You don't keep a team in the game with mistakes. You don't, you know, make it a game where it shouldn't be. Really impressive from Iowa State. Glad they got that rust out early, and schedule's pretty nice moving forward. Brocktober.
Clemson 42, Miami 17, Dan. This was 100% an Alabama-style crockpotting.
I'm just preparing the meat.
That tenderizes it.
That tenderizes it in a big way.
Crockpotting!
Yeah!
Clemson was just methodical, just did its thing. They took advantage of turnovers. They took advantage of 15 Miami penalties.
Mm-hmm.
They were clearly the class of the ACC going into this game. We have no reason to think otherwise on the other side of this game, Dan. Miami is better. They've got a better quarterback situation. They are improved. Their defense is still really good. Their line, their running game weren't really a match for Clemson here. And you need multiple dimensions if you're going to beat the Clemson Tigers. You can't just give it to a guy like De'Ara King, who's really talented, but you need more there. And this is what Clemson does to teams. They just slowly and methodically beat you into a pulp. And that's exactly what we saw.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to be as talented as Clemson to hang with Clemson, but you need to have to the man a game where everybody is playing to their absolute ceiling. Yeah. And Miami was not at that point. De'Ara King was not good downfield. Miami just doesn't have receivers, right? Like, I came away from that game thinking, like, they don't have dudes to be scared of out wide. And maybe they eventually will. I know they've got a good tight end in Brevin Jordan, and they've got guys on defense for sure. But if you are going to hang with a team as talented as Clemson, you have to have guys who can consistently hit their ceiling play to play. And Miami just does not have that. They were not able to move the ball on the ground. The line was a mess in front of De'Ara King. De'Ara King himself, he made plays with his feet, but downfield, there was nothing to be had. And Miami's defense, you pointed out the penalties. I mean, just there's no way to win a game against an excellent team playing as undisciplined as Miami played on both sides of the ball. But Miami has for sure dudes on that defense. And so if they're able to get the consistent performances like they've gotten from a couple of guys, I really like Jalen Phillips on the edge for the Canes.
Yeah,
if they're able to get that everywhere, if they're able to find guys on the outside these next couple of years and develop a quarterback, Miami becomes pretty scary. But something that I think, I'll just speak for myself, I overlooked in thinking Miami could make this a game, was they've lost this game, again, it was 96-3 the last couple times they've played, and this is not the last 2 years, this is the last two matchups. But you have to lose in a non-embarrassing fashion before you can hang with a team.
Yeah.
And this was somewhat embarrassing, but it wasn't a disaster. So, because it was what they had the blocked field goal right before halftime to make it 21-10, which was completely unrepresentative of what the game actually was. Right. So this was really a 42-10-ish sloppy, garbagey touchdown anyway at the end of the game. I'm going to be more positive about Clemson now. Travis Etienne is ridiculous. Trevor Lawrence is ridiculous. Didn't have his best game, had that fumble. The receivers that have been developing without Justin Ross have done a really impressive job. I mean, Amari Rodgers was already there. I love the Clemson secondary that took hits with guys leaving for the NFL. But the way that they play the ball in the air, they're so well coached. They're so aware. It's a shame that we don't get to see more good Clemson games, just a matchup.
No.
And that we just get these blowouts, because it'd be incredible to see a game in the fourth quarter where these guys are gassed and need to step up. But that's just not what the ACC is about right now. And so that's me lamenting other teams. No complaints about Clemson.
Let's move on to UNC and Virginia Tech. This is a wild game. Wild game. UNC was up big, 42-17, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Tech swaps in Hendon Hooker for Braxton Burmeister. Yeah, who would have thought? I had switched this game off because I thought it was pretty much over. And then the next thing I knew, it felt like the blink of an eye, I'm looking at the bottom line, like the new and improved Jumbotron bottom line, and I see that it's 42-37. What gives?
Yes.
What mm-hmm. gives?
23 points in the third quarter.
Unbelievable. So
who'd have thought?
Look, pretty much everything worked on offense for North Carolina. Sam Howell had a good game, but they mostly were impressive on the ground behind Michael Carter and Javonte Williams. They combined for nearly 400 yards and four rushing touchdowns. This is a game that I had the opportunity of going out on Twitter looking to see what folks were saying about Braxton Burmeister, and they're like, nah, we need to put Hendon Hooker in there. And, yeah. Perhaps if they had sooner, it would have been a little different result. I don't know. But at least in terms of North Carolina, they're 3-0. Their next five games are Florida State, NC State, UVA, Duke, and Wake. All of those are very winnable.
No, it would be a nightmare for UNC if they lost any of those games.
It would have to be. Yeah. I mean, NC State looks better, I think, than we expected. And we'll have to see how Brennan Armstrong is.
Do they? We can have that conversation.
We can have that conversation. We'll see. We'll see how Brennan Armstrong is. I didn't see the extent of his injury.
Yeah.
But those are winnable games for UNC. Mm-hmm. So it's plausible entirely that they could start 8-0 before they get to Notre Dame and Miami. And that's when we start having some interesting discussions, because there's a good team. There's a lot back. I think they're better on defense, although it didn't necessarily
show. They had some issues for sure in that second half, and with discipline as well and penalties. Virginia Tech was down 15 players, including either both safeties or a bunch of key dudes in the secondary, and it showed, especially open field tackling-wise and run fit-wise. North Carolina's got two very, very good running backs. It's the most impressive thing about their offense, and I really like Sam Howell. Right now, they are a really impressive running team with Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, and I'm very excited to see, because when do they have Notre Dame? It's not for a little bit, right?
Yep. No, it's not till November, yeah.
Okay, November 27th, and then Miami, and it looks like Western Carolina. So right now, it would be very difficult to see them losing twice. Miami, we'll see. It's on the road. But right now, if I gave you 1.5 of an over-under in terms of UNC losses, what are you taking?
I would probably take under.
You go under? Okay.
Yeah.
I think I would too. But it might be overreacting to a decimated Virginia Tech defense, because North Carolina also played BC really close, and they ran away from Syracuse. So the data is not all that complete on North Carolina right now, but we're getting a better picture. But there are asterisks next to basically their entire schedule. And we can get into Boston College, because I'm actually coming around to BC.
Yeah, the Jerky Boys. It's where I'm going next.
Herky Jerky Boys. Yeah.
31-30 in overtime. They knock off Pitt. I did call this one right, and I called it on two fronts. First off, not just that Boston College had a real pluck factor going into this game.
Say this every year, though.
Not just that
Roster's
the Jerky
turnover,
Boys.
Coaching staff's turnover. BC's plucky.
Not just that the Jerky Boys were my Yakko's home dog of the week, but also, if you want to go all the way back, harken back to our ACC preview, we talked about Pitt. We really like Pitt. And I'm pretty sure I said at some point along the way that, they're going to lose a game where they miss an extra point.
Yeah.
They're going to lose a dub one like that. And it's really unfortunate, because their kicker knocked through a 58-yarder with like 40 seconds left to tie the game to send it to overtime.
Yeah. Announcers probably said it would have been good from 60.
Always.
68. 72.
Always.
Yeah.
Alex Kespin is their kicker. Incredible 58-yarder, and then he misses an extra point. That sucks.
Yeah,
that sucks. So all due credit to BC here for doing what they did to, I think, a pretty good Pitt defense that just has not looked the part the last 2 weeks now. 358, three touchdowns for Phil Jurkovic. All three touchdowns go to Zay Flowers. He's a sophomore.
He's so good. Zay is so good.
He's developed a really quick rapport with Jurkovic. And Boston College is now 3-1, Dan. The Fighting Jeff Halfleys, are 3-1.
Mm-hmm. There is. It's a good amount of fight. That's a good word for what BC is showing, because they're not a crazy talented team. That a lot of things being overhauled. You know, Phil Dracovic comes in and needs that immediate eligibility in order to get this sort of competitive Boston College team. There was something about both Boston College, and I noticed this with Georgia Tech as well against Louisville, where there's that immediate buy-in. I know this is, you know, year two of Jeff Collins, but that immediate buy-in and belief with a true freshman quarterback at Georgia Tech, now with Phil Dracovic coming in, I love that sort of just belief, you know, especially in a very strange year. I came away crazy impressed with Boston College. Pitt's just sort of more of the same. Like, they're going to win this game or lose this game by 1 to 4.5 points every year. But the Boston College thing is interesting to me. And you're right about the herky-jerky element to Phil Dracovic, because it's not pretty.
No, it's not.
There are a number of positive adjectives I would use about Phil Dracovic, that he is scrappy, that he is willing to stay with a play, that's more of a phrase than an adjective, but that he locks in on dudes downfield really, really well. His connection with Zay Flowers is really impressive, but you're driving through some construction zones to get to the final destination with Phil Dracovic.
His throwing motion is what an algorithm might think a robot needs in order to throw something forward. Like, yeah. It's not human. It's sort of robotic. It mm-hmm. feels unnatural, but as long as the ball is getting where it needs to go.
Yeah.
As long as they're winning, they just beat Pitt. Pitt's a good team.
If you can picture what you'd look like holding a giant pipe over your shoulder, that's part of the motion.
It really is, yeah.
That's part of the motion. Yeah, just sort of somehow.
But I don't know. Whatever.
They won. They won on a missed extra point, and it counts as a W all the same. I'm excited to see them, and I guess we can transition to, because it does feel like Jeff Collins and Jeff Hafley fighting Jeffs,
yep.
Of the ACC. I was also in the shower. This is. I could be thinking about important things, but in the shower, I thought about, is it more likely that somebody named Collins Hafley or Hafley Collins is a Georgia recruit in 2027?
Definitely Hafley Collins, I'd say.
See, I think it's Collins Hafley. Hmm.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com. Let us know.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com.
Speaking of Jeff Collins, big win. This game mm-hmm. took place on Friday. This was another one that if we would have previewed it on the show, we didn't because it was a Friday game. I probably would have locked up Louisville -4.5 at the time. Did not work.
No.
Georgia Tech wins 46-27. It's their second of the year. It was a rainy night in Atlanta. They use turnovers to their advantage here, Dan. They weren't without their own share of mistakes for sure, but I think the observation here is that Jeff Sims is improving at quarterback. And
yeah,
look, they play hard. They play hard. They did last year. We're seeing it again through the early part of this season. Good on Jeff Collins. Good on Georgia Tech for, you know, I think exceeding expectations here.
Defense got better over the course of the game. I'm not going to play Dvorak, but these are the Louisville drives. I know they had issues on offense, quarterback, but it's punt, fumble, touchdown, fumble, punt, downs for Louisville in the second half. And that's something I actually really like looking at for these teams that are trying to scrap together a positive trajectory. And for Georgia Tech, and I've mentioned Jahmyr Gibbs as being one of my low-key joys this year. He's, you know, a good player for a team that's not going to be affecting much in the way of the ACC conference race. But Georgia Tech getting better over the course of games, that if you look at the games that might be winnable due to huge deficiencies, like Louisville's defense still very clearly is.
Louisville.
Tech, 2-2, 2-1 in the ACC. Trajectory, which might be my favorite word of this very strange season, it seems very real. They're going to lose a game 52-19, but they're going to win some winnables.
Win some winnables. Yeah. Speaking of which,
yeah,
Louisville is 1-3. Turnovers killed them for 2 weeks in a row. And, mm-hmm. You know, good effort from Malik Cunningham.
Malik. Yeah.
And Javian Hawkins, but turnovers.
Did
really
Louisville and Mississippi State not play each other in a bowl game? Did they infect each other with some sort of very strange, I know this is a very strange year to say the word infect, but I'm saying this in a jokey way, to be clear. Is there some sort of mutual football transmitted disease?
There's some
that
RNA
that's
swapped on the pigskin. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like, there's a Freaky Friday element and I don't like it.
Three other games here in the ACC that we'll cover very quickly. Notre Dame 42-26 over Florida State. Notre Dame was off a longer than usual layover because of some of their own issues with the COVID. Looked really good on offense, especially on the ground. Kyren Williams, Chris Tyree combined for 288 and 3 touchdowns. Ian Book took some more vertical shots.
I saw that. He was hitting what, Javon McKinley?
Yeah, that was the one takeaway that I had. The running game, if that can continue to develop, would be a huge, huge deal for the Irish. But the ability, the willingness to stretch the field and look downfield, keep his eyes downfield and not necessarily just take off, that I don't know if they're working with him on that. I don't know if that was part of the specific game plan here, but that did not go unnoticed by me. Notre Dame's got Louisville next. And I was worried about that game. I'm always worried about a Notre Dame opponent. Doesn't matter who it is, but I'm decidedly less worried than I was a couple weeks ago, just given where things have gone.
I think you proclaimed after week one, Notre Dame's losing to Louisville.
I think
you made that proclamation.
Who's to say? Really?
Who's to say?
Who's to say? And Florida State put up a little bit more of a fight. Jordan Travis got the start.
Yeah.
A little bit more of a fight than many expected. They weren't a match in the long term for Notre Dame in this game, but I thought acquitted themselves quite well.
I thought Jordan Travis, I went through this game quickly, was a playmaker. He's not there yet, but he makes plays both with his feet. Like, he buys himself time really well because he certainly does not have the offensive line in front of him that allows him to rock back and step into throws. But there is something, there's a spark there with him. Tamarian Terry getting his is not a surprise even against a good defense like Notre Dame. He's just that good. But I don't come away with this game feeling good about Florida State. I come away from this game feeling good about Notre Dame on the ground. And still, I know you mentioning Ian Book looking downfield more, and that's fine. But maybe he should have done it more against Florida State, if I'm nitpicking.
Baby
right
steps,
now.
Dan. Baby steps.
Okay.
All right. And finally, in the ACC, we had NC State by 17 over UVA. A nice win for them. Brennan Armstrong, as I mentioned earlier, got hurt for UVA. So, we'll have to wait and see on his status. Sort of a letdown game for UVA after the Clemson game. Even though they lost the Clemson game, they just 4 turnovers in this game. Really wasn't clean on either side. But, nice win for NC State. And
it was NC State taking advantage of Virginia mistakes. It was short fields. I think they had a pick six.
They did.
It was NC State taking advantage. You know what? Even if you don't play that well on offense, I know NC State ran the ball pretty well. They took advantage of an injured quarterback. They took advantage of turnovers. Devin Leary did not have that good a game. I think he completed 40-some-odd% of his passes. And I didn't watch much of this game. But from what I could tell, NC State did the responsible thing, Ty. And they just took advantage of turnovers.
Took advantage. And finally, Duke 38, Syracuse 24. I have no thoughts on this game.
I mentioned this earlier. 4 turnovers for Duke.
Yeah.
0 for Syracuse. Duke wins this game comfortably because of what they were able to do on the ground. Also, shout out to Tommy DeVito. I think he's out for the rest of the year with a lower leg injury. That sucks. Just a disappointing year, and hope he's able to recover and, be a part of an improving Syracuse team, because it's time to write off the orange in 2020 if it already wasn't. So,
okay.
Yeah, I feel for him.
Any other action that you want to highlight here before we let the fine people go?
Houston finally played a game.
Hey!
And comfortably beat Tulane.
Congratulations.
So happy to see that. Marquez Stevenson came up big. I watched this after the fact. We went through, East Carolina is now a team that has a win. Navy had a very strange win against Temple late. I'm looking through here to make sure. Marshall, there's a couple of very quiet Conference USA stories. Marshall is 3-0. Western Kentucky has been disappointing. I'm trying to think. Oh, Louisiana Tech also hasn't lost in conference. UTEP, 3-2. I don't care what their schedule is. UTEP winning more than one game was something I was not fully prepared for this year. Otherwise, I don't fully think so. Arkansas State had a nice win over Central Arkansas, I guess. Army snuck by the Citadel. I actually do have, Liberty won. I do have Colonial League scores if you want to impressed by those.
Please.
Or just the fact that I found these.
I got
Northwestern.
I was getting
laid the wood.
I was getting push alerts on my phone. I've set them up now. Yeah, for the Colonial League. This is where we're at.
Smart.
Yeah.
Northwestern laid the wood against Palmerton, 57-28. Mm. Notre Dame comfortably distanced itself from Catasauqua.
You got it.
Catasauqua.
We call it, it's Catasauqua, but it's Caddy.
Caddy. Yeah. Salisbury, they give up some points to Penn Argyle.
Argyle.
Pally High, 35-0, an embarrassment of riches over Bangor. Sauk and Valley, snuck by Southern Lehigh. And I think, does that round everything out? The late game was Northern Lehigh against Wilson. I don't have the results yet.
That was on Saturday, I think.
It was a Saturday game, yeah. So I don't have access to the results of that. I think if I had to, without knowing anything about any of these programs and watching a second of any of these games, if I had to do a detailed power ranking, Pally High is the the class. Although we have some nice offenses here. Notre Dame can move the ball.
Do we have any dudes or anything that we want to shout out here?
Oh, I did ask people for dudes. I didn't make my own list. I just asked for people's dudes. A&M fans said Todd Grantham, and that's not nice. That is not nice. Got a couple, Connor Bazelak, Kyron Williams from a couple people. He had a really nice long run early, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And your guy, Chris Tyree, broke 100 yards, I believe.
My dude.
Yeah, Isaiah Spiller, Jahmyr Gibbs I had mentioned. Jeremy Pruitt's mask got a couple of shout-outs. Brent Venables. Did a good job. Good Will Howard, which I think I'm okay with as a nickname, maybe.
Sure.
Yes, I think he has to be good more than that one long run, but I'm willing to accept it. Matt Corral was definitely a dude along with that running back duo and Kenny Yeboah. So a quadrant of dudes, I suppose, for Ole Miss. That's what I have in front of me.
A quadrant of dudes. So, okay, solidverbal@gmail.com is how you can email in. Don't forget to follow along on social media. We're going to be launching the Patreon on Wednesday, Dan.
We are. And we are, there's a good amount of excited energy, I think, in our guts right now. We've been building to this for a long time, and we are moving the recap show to Mondays. It's sort of, we looked at the data, we listened to you and when you listened to the show, and it all sort of aligned. We know some of you like listening on Sunday, so I would stay tuned as for a possibility of that with regard to Patreon. But we're quite excited to reveal all of our plans for Patreon, and we'll be doing so on the 14th, which is this coming Wednesday, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
Big moment. So big moment. We're excited.
We've got tiers. We've got elements that we've never even revealed that are possibilities with regard to the Solid Verbal video stuff, web stuff. There's merchandise stuff, Ty. I'm over the moon here, excited for this next step.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah. We've had requests forever to do something like this. And
people just like supporting the show.
Yeah.
People just like, you know, they've listened for so long and, you know, we're so grateful for that and they want to give back. And that's something that we don't ask for, we don't expect, but it's really nice that it's all coming together nicely, finally.
Finally. All right. Yeah. Well, we appreciate everybody listening along with us here as we recap all the action in week 6. Some big games in week 7. We're excited to dive into those when the time is right. You can listen for our next show on Wednesday morning.
Correct.
That's when it drops.
Week 7 preview. Do you have week 7 in front of you? Is there anything spicy?
Well, there's Georgia, Alabama. That's the spicy one.
Georgia, Alabama. Is that an afternooner? Is that a CBS 3:30 Eastern?
Yeah.
I love that window. Is there a hefty early window like we got this week? Potentially?
I have not actually done the deep dive yet. So
I'm pulling it up in front of me right now before we sign off.
Yeah.
Week 7.
I know Georgia, Alabama is a big one.
We're this much closer to Big Ten, Pac-12, MAC, and Mountain West football. BYU, Houston, Friday night. That's early spice, Ty. Pitt, Miami. I wouldn't recommend watching that game. You got Louisville, Notre Dame. You already penciled in Louisville for the W there. LSU, Florida is going to be strange. It's definitely going to be strange. A&M, Mississippi State, no. Georgia, Alabama, yes. Okay, I would say off week in terms of obvious bangers, but those seem to be the fun ones nonetheless.
All right, well, if you missed any of the action,
yeah,
and you want to listen back through to maybe some of the broadcasts out there, College Football Rewind, we talked about it on the last show.
Oh, yeah.
All you got to do is search for College Sports Now, wherever you get your podcasts. It's available Sunday mornings through the regular season. They go through all the top 25 action. Sometimes they take you inside the booth so you can hear some of the team-specific radio calls. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun from our good friends over at Learfield IMG College. So check that out. The only other personal note, if I could, Dan, one thing that I wanted to add in here, we were passed along some sad news. Sad to hear that Wesley Brown, a friend of the podcast, a Reverb caller, passed away far too soon last Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We just wanted to send our condolences out to his family, his friends. He was a voracious reader. So his family's requested that donations be made to Everybody Wins, which is a noble cause and organization that promotes children's literacy.
Definitely.
I will post that link in the show notes. Hope everyone can give it the attention it deserves. And if you got a few bucks to spare, chip that in for a good cause. But thoughts and prayers and condolences out to Wesley's family. Really sad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We hope Wesley, wherever he is, stay solid.
Stay solid, man. All right. Good show, Dan. Fun to catch up as always and talk all things college football. We appreciate everyone's support out there, not just on this episode, but for all the calls yesterday and for all the support we know you're going to give us moving forward. If you like the show, don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to review, to rate. All that stuff is so very greatly appreciated. We will be back on Wednesday. We're going to talk about week 7, a spicy week 7, Dan.
I'm ready.
I'll talk to you all on Wednesday. Dan, I'll catch up with you after the podcast here.
Yeah.
In the meantime, for that guy over there, Dan, for myself, Ty, we'll talk to you all soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.